This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Because people sing along to it and they say, I love this song.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you know what it's about?
Mine is Suburban Legends. It's a new song, but 1989 has always been my favourite. And it was where I started as a Taylor fan.
So it's going to be forever? Or it's going to go down in flames?
Shake It All was out when you were four.
Yes. I was in grad school, so...
Hello and welcome to Pop Vouchers, a pop culture podcast by The Straits Times. Today is our very special Taylor Swift podcast. Yes, we've already done one episode on her, but Mama is coming, so we need to do more, okay? So today I have with me three special guests. One is someone who's already been on the podcast before, my colleague Yemini. We also have two more guests with us to discuss the intergenerational appeal of Taylor. So let's start with Yemini. Why don't you introduce yourself again for our listeners and viewers?
Hi, my name's Yemini. I'm a correspondent with the Life Desk at the Straits Times. I work alongside Jen. But the last 2 months, I've been doubling up as our unofficial Taylor Swift correspondent, working on lots of interesting coverage. And we really wanted to talk about Taylor's intergenerational appeal and her amazing lyrics. So we thought, why don't we bring in two people from two different walks of life who can sort of bring a different perspective to it, along with me and Jen with our millennial perspectives.
Yes, so today we have with us Yvonne and Ravi. All right, let's start with Yvonne. Yvonne, tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you became a Swiftie.
Well, I grew up in the age of Taylor Swift because I was born in 2008, and that was about the time that Taylor Swift first broke into the scene. My very first experience was that for one of our kindergarten graduations, we danced to Shake It Off at the tender age of 4. So I've been here a while.
Shake It Off was out when you were 4?
Yes.
I was in grad school, so...
Not quite when I was 4, but a little bit around there.
Okay. And Ravi, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us what you do. I know you do something quite special. And how you became a Swiftie.
Right, so thank you so much. My name is Ravi. I work in organizational cultural transformation changes. And I fell in love with Love Story in 2008, absolutely adored this song, and nobody had heard of Taylor Swift back then. And a couple of years ago, I became really aware that she is a literary master. So I fell in love with the lyrics, and I started to see across a whole career an extraordinary poetic brilliance, easily as good as any of the masters in history. So I became an ultra fan of her lyrics about 3 years ago.
Okay, and because this is about intergenerational appeal, Ravi, do you mind revealing your age?
51.
Okay, so clearly she is appealing to everybody across all walks of life. All right, so today, actually, because it is a video podcast, we are really hoping that listeners would go click on the video because we have quite a little Taylor Swift shrine set up here. Yemini, you want to explain it?
Yeah, so we've got a Speak Now vinyl, and we've also got some liner notes from some albums. Like, we've got Evermore there, 1989. We've got both versions, the original and Taylor's version. There's a Lover journal as well. Plus, we've also got two mirror balls. As fans will know, the song Mirror Ball from Folklore. And also my special flourish, which is three cats to represent Mama Swift's three cats.
Yes, and
Benji, Meredith, and Olivia. I don't know if we all have favorite cats.
I have to be for the Meredith Grey cat because I am held hostage to Grey's Anatomy as a longtime fan. So fair. I have to be a Meredith Grey stan.
I would say Benji because he's like the epitome of that emoji, which is like, you know, the really like white kitten eyes.
He's also a time person, a time cat of the year.
Yes, he was on the cover with Taylor. Yeah, do you guys have any opinions on cats?
Mine is probably Olivia. I think she doesn't get as much attention, but I like her just because she's so funny.
She was in the backpack.
Always in the background of videos and stuff. She's super cute.
I haven't thought about it. More research is needed.
But actually, we should also discuss the fact that almost all of us are wearing TS cardigans.
Yes.
Yvonne, tell us about yours.
Well, I just got mine for Christmas from my favorite godmother. Me and my god sister have matching Midnight's cardigans.
Cute. And Ravi's wearing a Folklore cardigan and I'm wearing a Speak Now cardigan. They're just kind of fun bits of merchandise. It's just part of the fun of being a Swiftie, you know, the little bits and pieces that go with the culture of it beyond the music. But obviously we're here for the music.
Yes.
One thing I would like to ask Ravi actually is, he was a corporate guy. But before that, you were like a Cambridge graduate. You studied literature. Like, how did you go from all of that to like hosting Taylor Swift workshops?
Yes. So studying classical literature includes the greats, T.S. Eliot, John Milton, William Blake. But also I fell in love with Bob Dylan's lyrics and Joni Mitchell's lyrics. And some of these characters carve out the space for masters like Taylor to do her thing. So we used to take Bob Dylan seriously, and we still do. And of course, he won a Nobel Prize many years later.
Sorry, I need to interject, because we had a conversation, Ravi, where you told me you strongly feel that Taylor will likely win a Nobel Literature Prize. And no, not just that, but also a Peace Prize. And I had to like stop and kind of question you on that, but I'd love to hear you. I think we'd all like to hear you tell us
your justification.
About that.
Yes.
Okay, so we can't predict who's going to win prizes. It's a bit of fun on top of brilliance. But when you are a master at art, it takes time for people to realize this. Taylor Swift disguises her literary brilliance as a cowboy boot wearing glitter and sparkly dress lover. Okay, but the lyrics are extraordinarily brilliant, and Bob Dylan's were the same. And as the years go by, more and more of us catch up with that. And there's several academics around the world who've come out and said the same thing. Folklore and Evermore, we start to see this level of brilliance. Now, the early stuff was brilliant too, but all artists develop over time. And so Nobel Prizes are also about influence, as well as what are you writing your songs about? And Taylor is up there with the best in history.
I mean, who knows, when Yvonne's older, maybe her generation will be, you know, crowning Taylor with a Nobel Prize.
Don't worry, during the ceremony, my grandchildren will be there.
So, okay, I guess before we launch into a big discussion of the lyrics, we have some songs lined up, some of her most famous songs. We're going to be discussing why the lyrics are literary and why the lyrics are interesting and valuable and how it ties into our times. But before that, let's just, you know, come on, I don't want too many explanations, but one favorite song. Now, go. Don't think too much.
Mine is Suburban Legends. It's a new song, but 1989 has always been my favorite, and it was where I started as a Taylor fan. And Suburban Legends is just such a teenage love story, and maybe I'm in that era of my life, so I think it really speaks to me. And so many of the lyrics are so interesting. And I've used it for poetry, literature, exam, practice.
Interesting.
So. Did it like get you a high score?
No, it was just practice. Okay. But my teacher marked it, and he said, you know, maybe we should analyze some Taylor Swift songs in class.
Because he's unseen poetry.
Yes, he's
and
right.
He did.
Unseen poetry. Yeah. I said it's seen because everyone has seen it.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ravi, go.
Oh, gosh. Right Where You Left Me.
I love that song.
Heartbreaker. Okay. This poor girl. And I weep for this girl who's stuck in her restaurant. Astonishing work. It demonstrates Taylor is a master of rhythm and rhyme. She does it as great as any of the greatest. Heartbreaker song, beautiful.
Yemini?
Easy for me. I love Call It What You Want because it's such a romantic song. And I think it's actually a very good representation of the Reputation era, which everyone thinks black, edgy, snakes. But actually, it's a love story, you know.
It's a very romantic album.
It's a very romantic album. And there's so many beautiful lyrics in that as well. Like, and memorable ones, like, you know, I brought a knife to a gunfight and things like that. It just puts me in the mind of like, oh, Taylor's like someone who is maturing and kind of settling into a different phase of life. So yeah, it's one song that I can always listen to and just get taken back, transported to when I first heard it and was like, hang on a minute, this is really good.
Okay. I'm the host, so I'm going to cheat. I have Champagne Problems and My Tears Ricochet.
Yes.
If we're talking about lyrics, I think those two, I love a storytelling song. And I think Champagne Problems is very much a storytelling song, along with our colleague Charmaine's favorite song, No Body, No Crime. Very, very storytelling based. I like those. My Tears Ricochet, I just really like that one lyric where she says, we gather stones, never knowing what they mean. Some to throw, some to make a diamond ring. And I was like, oh, I love that. But okay, anyway, let's launch into what we are going to discuss today. Of course, I think all the songs that we like are pretty, they're famous, but you know, if we're going to talk about the most famous, like average, just no non-Swiftie you would know, I think let's start with Blank Space.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually Taylor's video on YouTube, so I didn't realize actually, that it was as popular as it is. So I think it's a good one to begin with, because probably everyone kind of has heard of it. But also, I think it was an interesting song because maybe it changed a lot of people's perception of what Taylor wrote about. So Ravi, maybe you could kind of take us off with some recital of her lyrics.
Yeah, just to put in some context here, Blank Space is from the 1989 album.
From 2014.
Yeah, 2014. Okay.
Great. Okay, so I'll recite a couple of the verses of it and I'll give it my own rhythm spin, and I'm not going to sing it either. All right. New money, suit and tie. I can read you like a magazine. Ain't it funny? Rumors fly. And I know you heard about me. So, hey, let's be friends. I'm dying to see how this one ends. Grab your passport and my hand. I can make the bad guys good for a weekend. So it's going to be forever, or it's going to go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over. If the high was worth the pain. Got a long list of ex-lovers. They'll tell you I'm insane. Because you know I love the players and you love the game. Because we're young and we're reckless. We'll take this way too far. It'll leave you breathless. Or with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers. They'll tell you I'm insane. But I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very nice. I mean, up to this point, I think the stereotype of Taylor was that she was a young woman who only wrote about her boyfriends, her love life, ex-boyfriends, you know, put them on blast. So this song really kind of got people sitting up and noticing that, oh, this is interesting. It's like a humorous, satirical take on the media's obsession with her love life. Because she herself was not necessarily parading it out, right? It was everyone else sort of making a big deal out of it. So I was in my mid-20s when this song came out. So, you know, for me, it was an interesting song. But I'm kind of curious, Yvonne, like, how you would have, like, grown up with it. Because you mentioned hearing Shake It Off.
When you were four.
Sorry, yeah, six. So that's from the same album.
Six.
Yeah, so you were a bit young. So has your perception of the song evolved over the years? Like, maybe it was initially like, oh, it's a fun song, but you don't quite click with the lyrics until you kind of, you know, accumulate a few years.
Well, I think at 6 years old, it's a bit difficult to understand songs about love and romance because I was six. But nowadays, 1989 is my favorite album and I really like Blank Space. But I do remember vividly watching the multiple parodies because Blank Space was, because of how fast she said some of the lyrics, a lot of it was misinterpreted.
Starbucks lovers.
And I remember watching several parodies where there was like the whole song was about Starbucks, and then instead of a blank space to, you know, sign up to date Taylor Swift, it was a blank space to write my name on the Starbucks cup.
Right. So just a quick explanation, yeah. I've got a long list of ex-lovers. People kind of heard that as Starbucks lovers. So that's where that comes from. Yeah, that's a really good point because that has become iconic in itself. So how do you feel about the song like now? Like, do you kind of, because you're still young, like, do you kind of feel like, oh, I can't wait to see if that's an experience I'm going to have?
Oh, that's an experience. Does everyone want to have the experience?
I don't know if I can say that because my mom's sitting behind the camera. But I do really like the song. And maybe one day I will experience something like that. Hopefully not with so much pain and blood. But I do know, and I hope my friends aren't watching this because I saw my friends planning my birthday party, a surprise birthday party. And they're trying to make me the cake for Blank Space.
Nice.
I get a little bit of the Blank Space experience.
So in the music video, there's a heart-shaped cake, white color, boys only one love with torture, I think, or something it says. And then Taylor stabs it and then blood
comes out.
Red jelly spurts out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a fun cake to have for sure.
It is. I saw so many TikToks about people
with
having it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I wonder if anybody will make this for me for my birthday.
Say it very loudly so your friends can hear
it. Say it super loudly into the microphone. Yeah.
Ravi, what about you? What do you make of this song?
So I had no idea about Taylor's love life because I typically don't read the tabloid gossip and so on. So it was astonishing to me to find out that women get treated very differently from men.
And we can't relate because, we kind of grew up with it.
So you wouldn't get into trouble for doing any of this if you're a man. In fact, that's kind of what we expect. So this is Taylor holding up a mirror, not only to the way she's being treated by the tabloids and so on and everybody else, but also, well, you know, as a man, you don't get into this kind of trouble. And this is one of the reasons her impact is so enormous, because she can say things that many people wouldn't dare to say. And there's a lot of innuendo in this song, which may not be obvious, where she buries and encrypts and says things. And this is part of the literary fascination for me. Literary guys change culture, and Taylor changes culture. And the way you do that is you hold up a mirror. Here's what it looks like.
So what do you think is poetic about this? You know, I was also a literature student.
Brilliant.
So, you know, what sort of, you know, the rhymes? Is it the rhythm of it? Is it the way it's organized?
Yeah, it's a very tightly organized rhythm. So mm-hmm. the rhymes fit in, mm-hmm. you know, unlike Antihero, we'll talk about a bit later. So it's super structured and predictable. Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. Now that rhythm holds up a mirror to how everybody just follows a pathway and a track of thinking. And people don't really think for themselves. So my rhythm tightly reflects the emotional engagement with this fascination of some person's love life, which is a fantasy. Taylor doesn't live that way. She dated a couple of guys here and there, which everybody does. And it's turned into this massive drama. Why? To sell page views. Mm-hmm. That's the business of celebrity gossip, right?
Yes, I do think there is a nice parallel. Of course, we're not going to talk about this song deeply, but I do think there's a nice parallel with The Men, if we're doing comparative literature here. You know, a little bit of a nice parallel there, because as you mentioned, a man wouldn't necessarily get treated this way. And she does mention Leonardo DiCaprio. She disses him.
Thank you.
In
yes.
The Men. Because, well, nowadays, I think we do kind of judge Leonardo DiCaprio a little bit for dating only women below the age of 25. But that does come in a little bit. You know, I think it's a nice, if we're doing comparative literature, I think it's quite nice. But yeah, so again, we also mentioned Antihero. So that's another song that we're going to dive into.
Yeah, so October 2022, I don't know if you guys were paying attention to social media when Taylor dropped Midnights and also the Antihero music video.
Yes.
Overnight, suddenly everyone was like, hi, it's me. I'm the Promise Me.
It's me.
You know, you couldn't escape it. You couldn't escape it. So, but honestly, if you look at the lyrics, there are so many zingers of lyrics in there. So it was really hard to select lines to ask Ravi to recite, but I think we settled on some good ones. So I will let Ravi get on with it.
Okay, again, I'm going to give slightly my own interpretation of this, not in the rhythm in which Taylor sings it.
Mm-hmm.
I have this thing where I get older, but just never wiser. Midnights become my afternoons. When my depression works the graveyard shift, all of the people I've ghosted stand there in the room. I should not be left to my own devices. They come with prices and vices. I end up in crisis. Taylor's old as time. I wake up screaming from dreaming. One day our watchers, you're leaving because you got tired of my scheming for the last time. It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. At tea time, everybody agrees. I'll stare directly at the sun, but never in the mirror. It must be exhausting, always rooting for the anti-hero. Sometimes I feel like everybody is a sexy baby and I'm a monster on the hill. Too big to hang out, slowly lurching toward your favorite city, pierced through the heart but never killed. Did you hear my covert narcissism, my disguise as altruism like some kind of congressman? Taylor's old as time. I wake up screaming from dreaming. One day I'll watch as you're leaving and life will lose all its meaning. For the last time, it's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. I'm the problem. It's me. At tea time, everybody agrees. I'll stare directly at the sun, but never in the mirror. It must be exhausting, always rooting for the anti-hero.
Phew, that's a long verse.
So the thing is, I really wanted to include some of those lines like, sexy baby, I'm a monster, and the slowly lurching towards your fear. It's this amazing way that she uses to describe her own life. You know she's talking about herself. She's not saying, I'm mega famous now and I have no friends. It's the way she kind of like illustrates it in a way that everyone immediately understands. Oh, right, that's what her life must be like. But at the same time, you've got lines like, I'll stare directly at the sun, but never in the mirror. Like, I relate to that as someone who is constantly like, combative and maybe and also self-aware, but you know, aware of my flaws and all. So yeah, for me it was a very interesting thing to see Taylor suddenly be so self-reflective, because I think she has had a tendency to either tell stories or discuss personal experiences, but I think this is one of the first songs where she really kind of becomes vulnerable from a very personal place, obviously. Because maybe in Focal on Evermore, other albums, she might have taken a fictional approach. And again, like I said, she uses the storytelling device from country music a lot to tell stories. So it's not clear that she's talking about herself. But in this, it really is her saying, this is me. I'm the anti-hero. So that's kind of why I wanted to go. That's what I kind of relate to. But I would like to hear what you guys make of that song.
Why not we start with Yvonne?
Well, I think that this is a really interesting song. And I remember when it came out, you know, Swifties were known for hyper-analyzing all her lyrics. But in this case, there actually was so much to analyze because she's telling, I feel, two stories at once. One about her own battle with self-consciousness and body issues, which that's always been a big contention between her and the media. She's been called too skinny, too fat, wearing too much makeup, wearing not enough makeup. And as a woman in the media who's so famous, you know, your looks are something that is criticized all the time in show business. But at the same time, she's also discussing the point of view of her fans. You know, our blind acceptance and following of her. In the music video, she wears that Vote For Me For Everything badge, which is like how we just, without even thinking, we vote for her Best Person of the Year, Grammys, all of that. And she worries that it's almost as if we're following her like a cult instead of because we actually enjoy her lyrics. And I think that's something that has, as she climbed stardom, and this year she's so super famous, so many people going to concerts are not even real Swifties. They're going for the FOMO or whatever, which, I mean, if you want to go for a concert, go for a concert. But at the same time, it does cause a lot of issues for fans and also for the artist yourself when you're performing and nobody's singing the lyrics except for one or two super famous songs. And then you're like, what am I even performing for?
It's interesting, though, because she really has been put on a pedestal this year. So I do kind of wonder how she feels now compared to, I guess, 2 years ago, whenever she wrote the song Anti-Hero, where she's like taking herself off the pedestal. And I think what you said, Yvonne, really makes sense, where she's like almost telling people like, no, don't worship me, because she has another song on Midnight's called Dear Reader, where she literally says, don't take advice from, you know, someone who is still figuring her life out. So I think that's really astute.
I mean, I do think that it is in context of right now, because we are recording it the week the Grammys happen. And I think this has been a particularly bad PR week for her. You know, at the Grammys, she was seen as snubbing Celine Dion. There was some stuff about her, some stuff just came out about her suing a 21-year-old person who tracks her private jet trips and stuff like that. So it's been a particularly bad PR week for her. I also think that this whole year, as you said, she was put on a pedestal. And I think she did leverage that. So it's quite interesting to see, like, you know, on and off, like how she feels about her own fame. And definitely, I think this song, you know, I like the first line. I have this thing where I just get older but never wiser, because I do feel that there is that, I think, was it George Clooney who came out with this theory? But there is this theory that people get stuck at the age that they become famous at. And I do think that she is aware of that on some level, that maybe her development was stunted because she got famous at such a young age. And it kind of blurs a lot of other things in your life. And of course, I love that line that you also love about being a monster lurching towards the city, you know, being self-conscious, being uncomfortable with who you are, and, you know, the fact that the things that you have accomplished, for better or worse, you know. But I also wanted specifically to ask Ravi, because you mentioned the difference in the literary rhythm of this versus Blank Space. When you were reading the verse, I was very aware that actually this had a lot more obvious rhyming than Blank Space. But Blank Space had a much more, had a rhythm that was a bit more familiar, I think. So can you expand on that?
So that's exactly a very well noticed point. It's very obvious rhymes, and Taylor is a master of rhyme once again. And if she wants to do subtle rhymes, she will. That'll create a certain emotional effect. If she wants to do obvious rhymes like this, these are in-your-faces rhymes. Dictionary.com, what rhymes with devices? Prices, vices, and I'll throw them into my crisis song. Okay, now that creates an effect, an emotional effect. But what is the effect? We have to feel it. And it's extreme. It's a caricature, extreme, screaming, dreaming, scheming, leaving, and so on. And these words echo in our minds, even if we're not analyzing it. It has an emotional impact. So she's using rhythm and rhyme here, because the rhythm's completely different from how I sung it. But she uses it to once again, as well as with the words, the meaning of the words, to reflect emotionally what she's singing about. And in a way, it's horrific. The anti-hero fascination is a horrific psychological mechanism. But she's also made it extremely fun and lovely. Yeah? Little bottles of wine and little funny big little tailors and so on. So she's taken something horrific, and because staring at the sun will blind you within a few seconds. It's not a trivial metaphor. And I have to take Taylor's metaphor seriously because she's a master. But she's made it sort of fun. And how do you say something difficult? Well, make it fun. Make it crazy. Make it ridiculous. Because people sing along to it and they say, I love this song.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you know what it's about? It's horrific.
And it is a little bit more, I think, if we have to say it, the rhythm of it, I think, is a much more run-on.
Yes.
I think the blank space rhythm is a lot more like, I hope I don't get cancelled by literary greats for this, but it's a lot more, you know, sonnet-like in a sense, like stanza and stanzas, you know?
Yes,
whereas
yes.
I think anti-hero is a run-on. It's a run-on emotion. It rhymes, but it runs on.
Yeah.
And it creates a different emotion.
Absolutely. For the last time could apply to the previous or the next line. It applies to both at the same time. Mm-hmm. And this is what masters do when they build this framework. No, it's a painting of emotion. Yeah, using these rhythms and rhymes. It's an extraordinary work of art.
Yes, I do. I do think it is. Now that I feel like after hearing you read it, I have a new appreciation for it.
Definitely. Yeah.
So thank you very much for that. And then yes, Yamini is gonna talk about the reason why the next song was included, because it was originally not in the plan. But all right, Yamini, let's go.
Yeah, so okay, I guess the songs we chose, as Jen mentioned, we were trying to choose songs that maybe most people will be familiar with, even if they're not necessarily self-professed Swifties. And I was just like, I think I did include this in my initial list, and it was partly because Jen, this is one of Jen's favorite songs. Funny if she didn't mention it earlier, I don't know why. But like, I remember one of our first discussions about Taylor early last year, she was like, All Too Well 10-minute version, All Too Well 10-minute version.
Yes, yes.
And even when I told Ravi we'll discuss All Too Well original version, he was like, oh my gosh, we've got to mention
the 10-minute version. The 10-minute version is the real version.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I do want to say though, the original version, I wanted to talk about it because even for Taylor, the song got transformed by the way the fans perceived it.
Yes.
So I felt like even that, okay, it's a very long song, even the original, it's 5 minutes. Mm. Even that somehow captured all these imaginations to create some kind of communal experience among fans. And that's really what gave us the 10-minute version. But in any case, we've chosen some lines from the 10-minute version that Ravi will sort of recite for us. Ravi, maybe you could quickly, after you recite, just talk a bit about, because initially you wanted to do a bit sing-songy, and I said, no, let's try and follow the cadence rather than the rhythm. So maybe afterwards you can also explain that further as well.
Yes,
I would also just like to say that I once listened to a NPR podcast about Taylor Swift's Eras Tour, and they mentioned that going to the Eras Tour and listening to All Too Well 10-minute version is literally like going to church, because everyone is reciting it and singing it at the same time. So let's take us to this experience, Ravi.
Oh, it's too big a responsibility for one man.
We hyped it up for you.
I'm going to do this too well. Okay, fine. Forgive me for what I'm about to do.
Take us to church. Let's go.
Maybe we got lost in translation. Maybe I asked for too much. But maybe this thing was a masterpiece. It is. Till you tore it all up, running scared. I was there. I remember it all too well. You call me up again just to break me like a promise. So casually cruel in the name of being honest. I'm a crumpled up piece of paper lying here because I remember it all too well. Time won't fly. It's like I'm paralyzed by it. I'd like to be my old self again, but I'm still trying to find it. After plaid shirt days and nights when you called me your own, now you mail back my things and I walk home alone. But you keep my old scarf from that very first week because it reminds you of innocence and it smells like me. You can't get rid of it because you remember it all too well. So, it's extraordinary language. So the rhythm is so important because the rhythm is part of her art. But when somebody, an idiot like me, recites it in rhythm, I sound like I'm half trying to sing it and half trying to recite it, and it doesn't work. So Taylor is rhythm, rhyme, ambiguity, metaphor, multiple meanings, and then it's melody, and then it's instrumentation, right? And then it's a video, and then it's a performance. The art is so rich that my interest is only literary, but I have to cut it off somewhere. So we do our best to recite it this way, but listen to the rhythm when you're listening to the song.
Yes, and I have to say, I have this script open on my iPad, and when you started, maybe we got lost in translation, that I wanted to guess, but I didn't, obviously, because we are podcasting, but I had this moment of like, oh my God, because that bridge is, oh, it's stunning. All right, let's go. Yvonne, what do you think about this?
Well, this is a very long song, and it's a rather sad song in some ways. I think a lot of my friends know that I don't enjoy listening to sad songs as much, which is weird because Taylor Swift writes so many sad songs, and I'm more of a happy-go-lucky dance person, and I don't enjoy sad songs as much. But All Too Well is something that I think was my most played song on Spotify last year.
Hmm.
Not sure, I have to check my Wrapped. But All Too Well is just, because it's so long, there's so much to analyze, so much meaning to it. And I think some of the words are really interesting. Like maybe we got lost in translation, which is used in so many different ways. Was I unable to tell you my real feelings? Or maybe I told it to you and you ignored it anyway. Maybe I asked for too much. This whole song is very, she's feeling guilty herself as if she was the one who ruined it. And then later on in the song, she goes on to say, you know, all your lovers stay my age, which she starts to realize that maybe she isn't the problem. And the interesting thing about this song is that obviously we're only seeing it from her perspective and we didn't see it from the other side.
Jake Gyllenhaal's. Okay.
Jake Gyllenhaal's side. He got a lot of flack for that when this song came out. But I think it's because we're only seeing it from one side, we're obviously biased towards her. And the fact that she goes on this whole journey, like a self-monologue, or like she said, a therapist's office, you know, processing it. At first it's me, but then I go on to realize it's somebody else. It shows so much depth and emotion to this relationship that she's writing about. And my favorite metaphor from the whole song, I mean, there's so much, is the red scarf, which we have on this table. And a lot of people have many different interpretations for it. There's some which is like, oh, she lost her virginity. Or, you know, he took away a part of her and now she can't recover. Or maybe it really was just a scarf. But the thing about Taylor and the way that she says these things, the way that she's trained her fandom to look for every single little clue, you can never tell with her. And I think that's a big part of the beauty of it, that like Ravi said, she's a performer, she's a storyteller. And this was just such a beautiful piece of her storytelling that not only brings so much meaning, it really sticks with people. And now every time I see a red scarf, I'm not the only one, I instantly think of All Too Well. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. She's so good at just harnessing the world and telling us what she wants to say, what she wants us to see.
Yeah. Yemini?
Yeah, I think, well, actually, what struck me as you were speaking, Yvonne, was going to see the Eras Tour concert film, and Jen was with me, and when All Too Well came on...
It was a screaming match.
Yeah, yeah, but it was like young girls were singing along, older women, people are, you know, it just struck me that this song somehow... regardless of the fact that she's singing about heartbreak, whether you experienced it or not, it seems to touch people. And I think, Yvonne, you really summed up why. It's because there are so many layers and motifs and images. And even now, looking through the lyrics again, I'm seeing, you know, I'd like to be my old self again, but I'm still trying to find it. And I think it's there's something about it that's very coming of age.
Yes, very coming of age.
Yeah, which is maybe why I think we all relate to it, regardless of whether we've had that specific experience.
Feeling kind of young, you know, and feeling really inexperienced.
Yes.
And wanting to become more experienced, and feeling that gap between you and that person, mm-hmm. you know. That definitely feels like an experience that a lot of people would have had.
So like Taylor herself said, this song was her way of processing something that was so significant in her life. And I think... in that process, she made a song that helps us all process something in our lives.
Makes like feel things.
Yeah, many things. I'm a crumpled up piece of paper lying here. Now, as I read it out, you're like, okay, that's an interesting lyric. But when she sings it and you hear in the song, you're like, oh my gosh, yes, we've all felt that way at some point in our lives, right?
Yes. Yeah. And the thing is, I think as a literature student, I did both English and Chinese literature, and both languages, my teachers always said poetry, you know, be it Chinese poetry, 词or 诗, or English poetry is all meant to be read. Like, they were all meant to, they were not meant for you to read. It's all meant for you to read it out, right? Like, to say it.
Pronounce, yes.
So, and there is that sense that when you read it like that, you don't feel it as much. But when you hear her sing it, and you feel the emotions, and you hear the enunciation of it, the way she, you know, the way she emphasizes some words. And my favorite lies, I told you this right before the podcast started, my favorite is So Casually Cruel, in the name of being honest, because who hasn't had that experience in their life? You know, who hasn't met someone who behaved in that way, you know? And it's significant. It harms you, it hurts you, and you remember that. And yeah, so like, when you hear her say it, it really does bring a certain sort of gravitas to it, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we are nearing the end of our podcast. It has been very fun, but I wanted to, you know, me and Yemini, we have some little fun songs,
rapid fire questions.
Okay. And you just wanted to, we did favorite song already, so.
Yeah, favorite song. So, okay, this one, name this Taylor Swift song. I'm going to read out the lines.
There's some deep cuts.
Yes. This one's easy because Ravi, you kind of mentioned it earlier. Help, I'm still at the restaurant.
Oh, so beautiful.
Right where you left me.
They are the hunters, we are the foxes.
I know places,
also from 1989.
Okay.
The rest that grew between telephones.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful song, Maroon.
Yes, Maroon.
She doesn't mention the word red at all in that song.
Yes.
But there's about 12 different colors for red. It's beautiful.
And finally, all my flowers grew back as thorns.
Do we have an answer?
Yes. My favorite song, Call It What You Want. I do want to mention that one. I think it's just an example of how Taylor basically takes an experience in her own life and puts a metaphor around it into something that we can all sort of think about how it relates to our own lives. And I think that's what I'm kind of gathering from our discussion today. Like, we've all kind of taken different things from her songs, and you know, it was really eye-opening to hear all you guys how you see the songs in a different way than I do. I don't know what you think, Jen.
Yeah, exactly. I do think, like, you know, I thought, because all of these songs that we were talking about, Blank Space, Antihero, All Too Well, these are all songs that I'm super familiar with, right? Like, everybody knows every single lyric to it, and I thought, you know, I know how I feel about the songs. But you know, having had this discussion, I really do feel like I have a renewed appreciation for it. And I do feel like it's quite interesting. And yeah, I do feel what you mentioned, because coming into it, I was a little bit skeptical, like, really? Literary greats, Shakespeare? And I was a little bit like, But now I'm reading, I'm like, truly there is something to be said for the rhythm and the rhymes and the organizational structure of it and the way that she makes the songs to be sang, like the way she, you know, thinks about her audience and how it would be performed. It is quite interesting. We have some little more rapid fire questions. Name one underrated Taylor Swift song for you.
Summer and Legends.
That's your favorite.
It's my favorite, and it's so many people hate it, and I don't know why, because it's so coming of age. So maybe because it's so coming of age and teen romance that other people don't relate to it.
I think that age though.
Well, that's why I relate to it. And I think because it's a vault song, it hasn't been around for as long. But it's such a beautiful song, and the lyrics in it really touch my heart.
Ravi?
I'll probably get in trouble for this, but Soon You'll Get Better is an extraordinary love song. And I'm just going to say it. It's the vulnerability is just, this is like a 1,000-year history, legacy, future song. It is so incredible.
It's a song about... we all assume it's about her mother's cancer, but it's really about someone who's not well, someone in your life who is ill and kind of like processing that,
but
right?
But more than that, it's the heartbreak of loss, right? You can't hang on to anything forever.
Yeah.
And when I say she's a master, she's talking about subjects that are universal. And she does it in the most incredible way. And the rhythm of this, you'll notice, it's very ordinary.
Yeah.
There's no messing with the rhythm. It's ordinary conversation. It's a master song.
I do love what you said about very universal, because we all think of her songs as extremely personal.
Yeah.
But it is the personal that is universal, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Take one little thing and magnify it and create a work of art, and you've covered all of humanity with one song.
Yem, your most underrated?
See, I came up with these questions for all of you to answer, so now I'm like, this song called Daylight, which I don't think is underrated among people who've listened to the Lover album, but it's just like a sort of a almost her kind of and like accepting her life and sort of deciding, okay, like, you know, whatever might happen in my life, my star might fade, and that's fine. Like, I want to continue loving and mm-hmm. keeping that as the kind of forefront of how I approach life. And yeah, this it's just like yeah. it ends the song, the album, and I just always find myself singing, you know, like that last, I'm not gonna sing it because I can't sing, but you know, she goes daylight, daylight, and you're like daylight, daylight, and you're like yeah, like it just
takes you to church.
Yeah, basically. So, okay, wait, I have a question to ask that I think is always fun. One Taylor Swift song on your skip list, it comes on and you're like, no. Ooh. Not today.
I'll go first because we already discussed the song, so I might as well just go first. Okay. Blank Space, I skip it. I don't dislike it. I don't dislike it, but I skip it because like I think it was overexposed at some point for me. So I just
I understand that. Yeah. No, actually, for a while, I skipped the entire 1989 album because of because it is I was sick
Yvonne
of the songs.
Is like,
oh my god!
How dare that is, you? Yeah. The audacity!
No, let me redeem myself. Because I was a bit over it. It was very overexposed. But then Taylor's version came out, and it made me fall in love all over again. So yes, it's back off the
Style TV.
It's just overexposed. Okay. Yes.
I think Ravi might cancel me for this.
No, I won't.
But for me, it's Soon You'll Get Better because it is, okay, it's an incredible song. The lyrics are amazing. But for me, it's so sad.
So sad.
Because it really brings back a lot of memories that sometimes you don't want to remember when you're in the MRT on the way to school. I prefer to listen to more upbeat songs that like get me ready for the day, which may be why 1989, I love it so much. Because I know it's poppy and it's overexposed. Pop, yeah. It's very, you know, hear it in the club at 3 a.m. But it also brings me so much confidence. And songs like Soon You'll Get Better, they're meant for when I'm crying in my room, huddled up in my blanket. So most of the time, it is on my skip list.
Ravi, do you skip anything?
Not cancel, just for the record. So I had a really hard time with Superman because I thought it was some great love song. And so I struggled and struggled. And then I decided it was satire. And then I felt happy about it. Because okay. It's absolutely ridiculous and it's full of satirical moments. It's not the most well-known song.
It's off Speak Now, just to, it's not the most well-known. Some people think it's about her dad, some people think it's about her,
I think it's satire and I don't think it's the most popular, but I may be wrong. But anyway, I made my peace with it by deciding it was satire, but I still don't like it very much because, I mean, the satire is great, but it's not the most popular song.
Okay, we really, really have to end, but... one last question. During the Grammys this week, Taylor announced a new album dropping on April, the Tortured Poets Department. Your reaction to the news and your expectations for it, go.
Okay. I'm a little bit sad because I was hoping for Reputation, Taylor's version, and now I'm worried that it's never going to happen. And I cannot wait because Reputation
it will happen.
Immediately after 1989, Reputation, right up there. And the fact that there's no Taylor's version hurts me a little bit. But looking at the names of the songs and the reactions to it so far, I'm really excited for it. And I'm a sucker for new music. So.
The names of the song. I don't know. Yeah. Ravi.
Lommel, whatever it is, Love of My Life. I can't wait to hear that song. I just fell in love. It's an acronym and it's LOL and it's MULL and it's love and it's everything that I want in a beautiful new song, whatever it is.
Yeah, I'm expecting to just be completely surprised and for all my expectations to be blown away because just the title itself is so different from all other album titles. The sort of like the punctuation, like there's a song Florida, points. So I'm like, I don't know what to expect, so I'm excited just for that.
I am here for the drama because So Long London, the smallest man in the world. I'm here for Joe Alwyn T.
Same.
Yeah. I think that's all for today. Thank you so much, Yvonne and Ravi, for coming on. And I hope you both, you know, enjoy her concert. She's coming March 2nd to March 9th. And, you know, new album, April 19th. Let's go check it out. Maybe more literary material for us to analyze.
Yeah. Ravi and Yvonne didn't manage to get tickets. So if anyone can hook them up. let us know.
Hold that up. Please, Live Nation. Please. Come on, guys.
The back is fine. We don't care.
Nosebleeds, guys.
Go for it. All right. So very happy that we all gathered here today to do this. And we only did 3 songs. Obviously, Taylor has a mammoth collection of songs to analyze, but hopefully, you know, today's discussion gave you a little bit of idea and, you know, appreciation for how she writes her lyrics and her abilities as a lyricist. And, you know, again, she's coming for 6 nights, March 2nd to March 9th. Hopefully anyone who got tickets can really enjoy themselves. Let's look forward to whatever content she brings us and whatever she brings us in the upcoming album, whatever new drama there is brewing, I am excited to see. So that's all for today and this week. This was the Pop Vouchers podcast. I'm your host, Jen Lee. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback to podcast@sbh.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.